Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, clinical master herbalist Donnie Yance.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest Leroy Mobley. I am Mark Lejeune, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Our guest today is all about unitive medicine. Unitive medicine, bridging advanced science and timeless wisdom to serve whole person healing. He has a quote in there on his website, and it's really cool. It says, in the space between a plant's intelligence and the body's wisdom, between ancient knowing and modern science, between sound and silence, that's where true healing lives. Donnie Yance. Now, interestingly enough, just this morning, Dorothy Lee Donahue, executive producer here at the Life Changes Show, sent me an article that she thought I'd find really interesting, and she was right. It was said, scientists discover crystals that spin, twist, and heal themselves. And the article goes on to talk about how and what. And it was too scientific for me to get into today, but it reminded me about something that I bet a lot of people don't know, and that is stainless steel. Stainless steel is self-healing. Now, I learned this years ago, and then I shared it with a couple people, and they couldn't believe it, like how, and I said, I don't know how, but it is. And so this morning, between learning about what our guest does and between the crystals that spin and heal, I thought, well, at least I'm going to learn about stainless steel and how it does it. So I'll tell you, quick little process. I looked up how does stainless steel heal itself. And it says that it does that through a thin layer of chromium dioxide that forms on the surface when it's exposed to oxygen. So in other words, if stainless steel is scratched, then a thin layer of chromium dioxide is formed and it heals itself. So I thought, okay, so chromium, that's the magic right there. So I looked at how does chromium heal itself? And I got back, chromium does not heal itself. Chromium does not heal at all, except when chromium combines with oxygen, it forms chromium oxide. And that, when it's part of stainless steel, heals the stainless steel. And I'm like, huh, that's interesting. So it's chromium and oxygen and stainless steel. That's the magic right there. But then I go on to learn, however, this depends on environmental conditions, the presence of moisture and oxygen, whether the healing process is enhanced and whether it's diminished. If there are other chemicals involved, then it can be hindered. And I thought, oh my gosh, I can't even heal my stainless steel. How am I going to heal my body or the world? Like, it is so much involved. The point, however, is we might not need to know all that. Maybe there are people out there that know about stainless steel, obviously. And there's somebody out there that knows about healing of the body. And let us get as much information as we can and learn as much as we can and about our body today.
Is it healing the stainless steel, or is the chromium creating a layer that gives the perception of healing over the scratches?
Oh. It literally has healing.
Maybe that's for a whole nother show.
It literally says healing, but then again, what's healing? Yeah.
Might look healed. It's a lot of us out there.
I don't even know what to say.
Excited for tonight's show and obviously a unifying perspective on things.
Aha, absolutely. Well, we are excited to have our guest on the show for sure. And our performance guest who will be joining us a little later. So we've titled this show, Now You Can Master Stress, Aging, and Healing, episode 878. Let's find out how. So we are featuring our interview guest, who is a clinical master herbalist, a whole health pioneer, a secular Franciscan monk, and an author. Welcome, Donnie Yance, to the Life Changers Show. Welcome, Donnie.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Donnie, great to have you here. So before we start healing stainless steel in our body and our world and our life, MH, CN, RH, all of that, please share with us what those are behind your name.
Master herbalist, certified nutritionist, secular Franciscan. Those are, I guess, what those stand for. Yeah.
Okay, good. So
I'm a nutritionist and an herbalist together. So often some people just frame it as herbalist, not just herbalist. But I like to know that herbal medicine and understanding nutrition as medicine are kind of the dynamic duo. One without the other is not complete, but they complement each other beautifully.
Nice, actually. And I was going to ask you earlier, we're going to get into this a little bit later, but when we were talking about Natura, which is your health products, and we were talking about Mederi, right? Mederi Care, which is your health company. You said you had an apothecary. So what's the difference between an herbalist and an apothecary?
Well, apothecary is where we make our medicine. So we at our clinic, we have a compounding facility. So in there, we have jars and jars of herbs in different preparations. Some are powdered extracts, some are fluid extracts, and some are tinctures, and some are crude herbs. And so we can make teas and decoctions. We can make fluid extract combination formulas for patients. And then we can also make powdered extract combinations. So we customize a lot of medicine for our patients. And then we can also make creams and salves and suppositories and topicals for patients as well. So outside of using already patented formulas, like say formulas I've concocted, we also do customization for our patients as well. So the apothecary is kind of the kitchen to make those. So that's what the apothecary is.
Ah, okay. For some reason, I thought an apothecary was a person.
No. Apothecary is where the herbalist makes the medicine.
And
Mederi, the Mederi word, it's a Latin word. It's the root word for medicine, and it means to heal and be whole. That's what that word translates over to meaning.
Nice. Okay. So I already got a sense, well, of course, but from what you said, I think the audience got a sense that you, that it's not a one size fits all when it comes to what you have available for people and how people need help, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's foundational medicine. There's a root system to medicine that is a commonality to all humans, and all living life forces all share the thought that we begin with an energy, and that energy has an intelligence, and that intelligence is core to how healthy we are and how disease can set in, but also to a standpoint of looking at how to keep optimizing health with the onset of aging and various stressors that we live in. So that core concept of building the root system of medicine is common. And a lot of the starting points that I would start with patients in building what I would say the root system of health is not different from one person to the next. But once we get that in place, now we start to be able to customize things based on the various lenses we may use to diagnose people. Some of those lenses are subjective. Some of them have to do with having the narrative of the patient tell you their story. Some of it is observation, some of it is through an intake form. And then the second lens is looking at people through all the laboratory tests that we may run on a patient, blood work, for example. And then the third lens is applying the etiology of the condition or the disease, or in the case of cancer, we're looking at pathology. So the idea is to optimize health as the first and final point, what you do. Regardless of the disease, you always start with, how do I cooperate with the life force and optimize that health? And so that is a common theme, no matter what someone presents with. I don't care what disease you have, I'm not interested, I just need to know about you and how to make you as healthy as possible. How do we analyze your blood work to see it in relationship to optimizing health and relationship to the disease? And then now I want to know a bit about the disease. But that's the third piece of what we do. So it's like, I call it putting on your Sherlock Holmes hat. Like you got to start investigating. And then the more clues you get, the more the pieces of the puzzle come together. But the big core pieces are common, to every human being that I do. Working with nervines and adaptogens and certain kinds of plants that I think everybody can benefit because they are nonspecific, they're normalizing, and they build robustness and they build efficiency through various networks throughout the body.
So I know your book is about adaptogens, and before we get too far into it, that's adaptogens in medical herbalism. That's your last book, but not your latest, because you're working on your latest at the moment. Elite Herbs and Natural Compounds for Mastering Stress, Aging, and Chronic Disease. So adaptogens, and how do herbs support all of that?
Well, the term adaptogens came out of Russian scientists from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, where they were looking of ways to gain advantages in every way, the cosmonauts, the Olympic athletes, in any way that they could. So they found that by providing people on a daily basis with certain plant extracts, that we saw a huge enhancement of the ability for humans to adapt to various stressors, to recover from those stressors, to be protected by various adversary external forces, and to make energy more efficient in the body. So building energy, increasing adaptation, increasing recovery, and then offsetting some of the weaknesses that may occur from pushing your body in one direction too far. For example, if you want to be a great athlete, your body's going to have you do everything it can, because that's what you're wanting it to be, at the expense of not doing something else very well. For example, Olympic athletes have very poor immune systems because their energy is all going into their athletic endeavors. And so adaptogens mitigate that. They expand what's called the dynamic range of healthy stability, so we can push further and have less consequences. And so the featured herbs are herbs like Eleutherococcus senecosis, sometimes referred to as Siberian ginseng, Schizandra chinensis, Panax ginseng, Panax quinquefolius, which is the American ginseng, rhodiola, ashwagandha. So some of these herbs are familiar to the audience, but what I've come to find in my 40 years of working with people, that plants love to be together. If you look at the ancient systems of medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, we shouldn't really be giving plants as soloists, just like in music. Often bringing an ensemble together, an orchestra together, or a band together, each piece contributes to something greater, that the sound that's created in that combination, no one musician could create on their own. So plants are very much like that too. So my book is a lot about how combining adaptogens both what I call those primary adaptogens, which are the ones I just spoke to, but then also complementing those with other plants, kind of like putting a gourmet meal together, like how beautiful it is. You know, any one food is only has a certain amount of health benefits, but when you build this beautiful plate of food, and, you know, I know earlier we talked about being Italian, you know, having just amazing, you know, plate of food, is that the combination of those foods is what makes the meal so beautiful and so delicious as well. So I see medicine in the same way, bringing lots of herbs together that complement each other, and that together they're better than they are as soloist. And so that's one of the unique messages of my book, and also how I think in general. So there's the primary adaptogens, the secondary adaptogens, companion adaptogens, and how nutrients might act as adaptogens in the body. Certain things that we're profoundly deficient in, magnesium, zinc, vitamin D, these nutrients are key to hundreds and hundreds of enzymatic pathways in our body. So when we're deficient in them, nothing in our body, none of the networks or pathways or systems can work efficiently because they're so dependent on those nutrients. And so I kind of bring those into the mix as well to kind of sort of complete this concept of adaptation and building the body from a more orchestrated perspective than, you know, I'm going to go and take this single herb or something because I heard it's good for me.
Donnie, your analogy of the eating an Italian meal is great. And I actually think it's even greater when we get to the other side of this. And the question is that if someone were eating that wonderful Italian meal put together beautifully by an Italian mom or grandma or somebody, a chef, sitting at the table with a bunch of Italians that are family, or it doesn't have to be Italians, it could be anybody, wonderful, that meal will taste differently and be healing in ways that might not have been if we ate them by ourselves. But what if we were sitting at the table with a bunch of angry people yelling at each other?
Yeah, you bring up a great, great point. And often when I sit with a patient and I want to discuss their diet, the first thing they want to tell me about is what they don't eat. And I have to stop them every single time. I said, I don't want to know what you don't eat. I want to know what you eat. And then I want to know how you eat. I want to know why you eat, when you eat, because some of that might be wrong. So I correct a lot of people's digestive problems by simply saying, you are not allowed to eat unless you're going to sit down and relax, because your digestion can't work unless the vagus nerve is activated. And that's why it's referred to as rest and digest. So in these Italian households, everybody's sitting down, they're taking their time, they're having conversation, they're eating slowly. It's the quality of the food and the conversation. And, you know, when you understand health, it really, everything comes down to relationship. So we want to optimize our relationship in every way. What's our relationship within ourselves? What's our relationship with our fellow human beings, with nature, with the cosmos, with our food that we put in our body and we bathe our bodies with? And so we want those relationships all to be healthy. And the importance of mealtime and spending time with people and conversing certainly adds to the health benefits of the food that you eat, or may even be even grander than the food that you choose to eat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's so many interesting concepts that I think are valid and important to understand, even when it comes to anything with regard to health. Ultimately, everything is healthy. It's all about the dosage. So, and everything is poison, but it's all about the dosage, because very tiny amounts of things that are unhealthy for you end up being good for you, because our bodies adapt. So the concept of building adaptation is critical to health. Adaptation is the single most important thing if we want to be healthy. And we can't run away from everything that's bad for us, because we'll never adapt to it. But we need very small amounts to let our bodies, and our bodies are fed overall in a health optimizing way, that now when we're exposed to something that may in small amounts not be good for us, our bodies exercise itself and get stronger as a result. It's just any athlete would know that. You don't get stronger by working out. You get stronger by working out and then letting your body recover. When it recovers, it enters in an anabolic state, and now it's going to get stronger. It's because exercise is catabolic. So there, you need a little stress, and then you need recovery. So a little bit of stress is good. Too much stress is very problematic. But the concept, like the sun, everyone says, you know, dermatologists say avoid the sun. Well, we know the sun is really important to health in every way, but too much sun, it will burn your skin, you know, and us, you know, Southern Italians, you know, we can take a bit more sun, our pigments are better. So we can, as long as our skin's not burning, the sun is good for us. So, you know, common sense tells us these things, you know, but some people say sun's bad, this is bad, that's bad. And we get too caught up in these things without really applying, like you started out with, what does wisdom teach us? Because wisdom is inherited in all ancient systems. And our grandmothers and grandfathers teach us wisdom, not the internet. Then what does science tell us and knowledge tell us? And as Einstein says, the intuitive mind is the sacred gift. The rational mind is the humble servant. We live in a world now that's forgotten the gift and now is worshiping the servant. Mm. We flipped it around. Mm. So wisdom is, phronesis is the Greek word, practical wisdom. Everything has to serve that. So science and knowledge is great as long as it serves ancient wisdom and builds upon that.
So where did you get so wise?
You know, I think it's through introspection, and I study every single day. I write every day. I compile research every day. And, you know, I'm a driven person, and I mostly just love watching people get well that everyone says they can't. So I'm very motivated by and I love nature and I love plants, and I see them as a face of our creator, a humble face of our creator. I mean, all the plants that we think that we're trying to kill. I mean, just think for a second how many millions of dollars are spent on trying to kill dandelions in everyone's lawn. And my grandmother, you know, my mother came over from Italy with nothing, and my grandfather dies of leukemia. And she's raising three kids, all basically 5, 7, and 9, with, and can't speak a word of English. So they have no money, no food. It's the depression. So my mother grew up going out and picking dandelions to eat for salad. And I said, Mom, you know, that's way healthier than the lettuce in the stores. I mean, dandelion is one of the most health promoting foods on the face of the planet. And I have a mug that says, if you can't beat them, eat them. So a lot of the humble foods are our best foods, you know, even simple things like potatoes. People knock potatoes. I said, potatoes are the only food on the planet that can sustain human life in and of itself. You can live on a potato. You can't live on any other food. Broccoli, you name it, you can't live on that. And there wouldn't be any Irish people if it wasn't for potatoes.
Really? You can live on a potato because...
You can live on a potato, and they're the best food for the environment because they're really easy to grow, and they're highly nutritious. They have every nutrient. They're low in calories, and people think they're empty foods, but they're wonderful, and they have nothing but associated health benefits from eating them. Certainly, a baked potato is great. You know, you don't want to be eating French fries and potato chips. Those are unhealthy, but a good old baked potato, roasted potatoes with, you know, rosemary and... You know, that's how I do my potatoes. I toss them in olive oil, garlic, salt, and pepper, and then put some rosemary on them or something like that. And they're a great, great food. But a lot of these humble foods people just put aside for some, you know, very expensive exotic food. And I said, no, I'll take the humble foods myself. And because in bread, you know, good, healthy bread is one of the best things you can eat too. And people, you know, think that that's, But bread is, you know, these things like grains and potatoes, like, you know, they're just humble foods. And I love humble medicine. And we live in a world that wants to see nothing but heroic medicine, you know. And I'll take humble medicine over heroic medicine any day.
So speaking of humble, can we talk about you being a secular Franciscan monk?
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
Well, that's interesting. You know, I've always been a kind of a seeker and, you know, wanting to find out how to be my most divine self, because as Saint Augustine says, you know, I've discovered that God is more me than I am myself. And when we come to that kind of understanding, it changes our whole perspective, and we want to leave this world or not leave it, but we want to transition out of this world knowing that we did the best we can subjectively to be our authentic self and emulate the essence of God in the world, which is always distilled down to simple things. How can I, in my unique way, bring as much love and goodness to the world? It's not about focusing on anything negative. It doesn't matter what's going on in the world. I need to focus on how to just be those two things, and that's in my authentic way. So
I'm sorry to stop you, but where does that come from? How can I do that? That's like a mission statement. Where does that come from?
I don't know. It's just.
Sort I mean, of my is it own. Yours or is it?
Yeah. For,
oh yeah, yeah, wow! Yeah, wow. Yeah, okay. Say it again, please.
Yeah. Well, how can I, in my own unique way, be divinity and bring as much love and goodness to the world? And there's a word, a Greek word called kenosis, and kenosis is a term that's used in to help our body get all the clutter out of our, that's getting in the way of us seeking the truth and hearing, as Pope Francis said, you know, listen for the whisper and the whisper will guide you. And so, you know, we're all looking for some great epiphany, and sometimes when you're just still and introspective, the whisper comes. And and so for me, I was just trying to find out how I can best serve. And I was a musician and I was in the health field. And then I was brought up Roman Catholic in a very Italian Catholic family. And I said, either this is the biggest farce ever created, or I need to take it more seriously, because it can't be one or the other. And I went in college and studied the great religions of the world, and really was attracted to a lot of Eastern religions, but they were still empty for me. And then I found Eastern Christianity and I bonded with that. But then it was kind of St. Francis that brought me back to being Catholic. I said, if anyone could live such a beautiful and holy life, and during the most corrupt time of the Catholic Church, and never say anything negative, and somehow emulate the life of Christ so beautifully, then I don't really need to go find another faith or another religion. And I can, you know, so St. Francis had a big impression on me in my life. And so I, you know, was like wanting to be a young St. Francis. I mean, I ran a soup kitchen, a shelter, and, you know, and with a nun. And so I lived in a Byzantine Rite Ukrainian Franciscan monastery. I was the only person that wasn't from the Ukraine in the monastery, and it's still there in Pennsylvania, Holy Door Mission Monastery in Sybersville, Pennsylvania. And it was a beautiful experience, and I left it to work with a nun to run a soup kitchen when my spiritual director, Father Philip O'Shea, went on to do missionary work in Central America. And my call, and like all of us, we keep evolving, and you know, and the soup kitchen was a place, but I got tired of serving people not healthy food and not seeing much difference other than feeding them food and letting them go on to the next day. There was no evolution to that. It was just the same thing every day, and the same, there was nothing wrong with it, but it wasn't where I wanted to go with people. I couldn't watch people drink their coffee with a cup of sugar in it, basically. I said it was just, I wanted to do more. And so I kind of got back in the health field, and then I kind of got specializing in oncology. So I'm well known in the field of cancer. And then,
you bring all of that. I the music, St. Francis was a lover of nature, right? Animals.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
So he's the patron saint of animals, of nature. His final poem, The Canticle of Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, is a beautiful testament to everything in nature and the universe being our brother and sister. And so, so for sure.
So I did a retreat to the patients. You know,
I was going to say, I did a retreat in Florence, Italy in June, and went to Liverna, which was the real sacred site of St. Francis. That's where he got the stigmatas, and that's where he lived most of his latter years of his life. And it was very beautiful to go there, and I recommend that. A lot of people go to Assisi, and that's kind of commercialized and beautiful, but Liverna is very sacred and very meditative, and it's where and it's about an hour or so outside of Florence, up in the mountains there. And so that was very wonderful to go and be in the presence of the cave, this cave that he went and did prayed in and lived in. That was a highlight of my life going there.
Very cool. So what I was saying is you bring this all to your practice. So there are certain, well, you have your mission statement, and there are certain mission statements for people that they might want to take on. For example, the golden rule of eating. Talk to us about that.
Well, it would be kind of what I said before. You want to see food as a relationship. So, and you want that, if you see yourself through a spiritual, emotional, and intellectual makeup, and you don't want to deny any of those. So you don't want to, you know, it does no good to say, oh, I'm going to eat this way, even though I don't like it and it doesn't work for my family because I might live a couple more days on the planet. That really isn't going to work. And so that relationship with food has to work on all levels. And I say the spiritual level is most important, because you will naturally gravitate to food from the earth and the beautiful smells of being in a garden and ripping basil and the smell of food that comes out of the garden. It hits you at this molecular and cellular level that you can't wait to consume that kind of food, as opposed to going, you know, eating some highly processed food or some fast food place. You know, they just aren't going to work if you check yourself at that deeper level. And then certainly intellectually, that's not going to work, because you know that food isn't very healthy for you. So now you bring in, and you don't deny your emotional self and what taste buds you may have, or how food might comfort you. You try to see it through all of those ways and find out in your own way how that can all work together in a harmonious way. You know, so, you know, again, you know, being Italian, I like Mediterranean food. So, you know, I'm very well known just, you know, for my eggplant rollatini. So, you know, that's a big dish that I make frequently. Yeah. You know, it's, I grill my eggplant. I do everything from scratch. I make my own pesto. I make my own sauce.
Stop.
I grind all my own flour to make my pizza crust. You know, I literally take my ancient grains, my kamut, and grind them down, and I make, you know, incredible. So,
The bread is healthy.
Yeah, exactly. The golden rule is the quality of your food is really, really important. And then the food combination, and always emphasizing food from the earth as your primary food. So I do more of like an 80-85% plant diet, and then like gives people 15%, 20% room to then include other things. I'm a pescatarian, so I'm a vegetarian that eats fish. I don't eat any meat, so that's how I do things. But everyone has that little bit of room. As you know, you don't need to be vegan, you don't need to go raw foods, you don't need to go in any radical diet. Just try to work with something that you can embrace for the rest of your life than doing something that's just a fad. So I'm really not into fad eating. I'm really into people making slow improvements in every way of that they see their health, and keep up with it, so that every month, every year, you can look back and saying, my relationship with food is better now than it's ever been, you know.
Well, as we're wrapping up here, my relationship with food, you say, mirrors my relationship with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us.
Well, what you have to learn is that when food enters your gut, it starts bathing with yourself in your gut. So there's this big pool in there, this big thing that goes on. It's like this bathing effect where things just homogenize together and swim together and swim and swim. And at some point, that gut and the food create new compounds. They're not in the food and they're not in their gut. Those compounds are small particle compounds, very small particle size that eventually our gut allows to go through that fine mesh, that stingy mesh, and into our bloodstream that then enter into a relationship with us at the molecular, cellular, and organ system level. And that food can have a profound effect on our healing. It can be inert and not be healing and not be harmful, and then it can be harmful. And when we eat poorly, it's a double negative, because we're eating something that is harming our body, and yet now we're lacking food that might be health promoting. So we want to minimize that down. So I tell everyone, a golden rule is 90% perfect. Never try to be 100% perfect. Strive for 90% perfect.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for that. I like what you're sharing, and I look forward to learning more from you. And of course, people can get your book, Adaptogens in Medical Herbalism. And Donnie Yance, DonnieYance.com. We have actually all the links for Donnie. And then Donnie, we included the one that you sent us for Mederi Center. Mm-hmm. And also you sent a couple others. So we have YouTube and LinkedIn. And so people can watch and learn and get your book. And you do seminars and workshops and even trips to Italy. So they can learn about that at the website, Donnie Yance, YANCE.com. And that all sounds exciting. And I want to hear your music. So haven't heard that yet. So I look forward to that as well.
Thank you. Well, Donnie, Cosmic Force is my latest album. So let's start with that one.
Which one?
Cosmic Force.
Cosmic Forest. Okay, nature again. Perfect. Yep. Okay. I'm sure it's all aligned, and I'm sure it's good music for the soul. Thank you so much. All the best to you. This has been a blast.
Right. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's fascinating to me how much there is to learn, and yet at the same time, especially the way Downey presents it, it's simple.
Yeah, if food's a mirror, then we all need to be more adaptogenic.
Yeah. You're clever. I wonder if Donnie's going to use that. I hear him laughing in the background going forward. With that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Michael, and I have been receiving so many fear-based videos and emails from family and friends. It is becoming extremely difficult to have meaningful conversations with people I love after receiving videos and emails that I discern are not true at all. How does one maintain close connection with loved ones who are no longer on the same page with me? Not only are they not on the same page, they aren't looking at the same book, nor are they in the same library.
Precious Michael, what you're describing is deeply human and honestly heartbreakingly common right now. You're not imagining the divide. It is real. And your metaphor about not even being in the same library is painfully accurate. Please understand and accept that there is nothing wrong with you for feeling strained, sad, or even quietly angry about this. You are grieving a kind of relationship loss while the people are still alive, and that's one of the most difficult challenges people are experiencing right now. So let's look at some ways to stay connected without losing yourself. A first step could be for you to separate love from agreement. It is important to know that you can love someone without sharing their worldview. But you cannot stay healthy if you are constantly pulled into defending reality. The way I handle this is by reminding myself that I don't need them to see what I see in order to love them. This mindset doesn't mean you approve. It simply means you don't need to convert them to your viewpoint. And please love yourself enough to easily refuse to engage with your loved ones by reacting to fear-based videos or predictions. You are the power in your world, and you can simply choose to delete these kinds of messages without needing to debate or explain your point of view. No debating, no explaining, and no justifying is needed. If they continue to send more anyway, you can simply not respond to that part of the message. You can easily redirect conversations to topics that matter. Find something loving to talk about on subjects that you're all in agreement with, and redirect conversations to those things you are all aligned with. And please remember that not every relationship can hold the same kind of conversation that were shared in the past. There is so much fear presented, and many wonderful people are emotionally living inside an emergency state of mind. Until fear loosens its grip, the kind of conversations you've had in the past may be temporarily unavailable. Most importantly, please know that this doesn't mean that you have failed. It doesn't mean that you are not loved and respected, and it certainly does not mean that the relationship is over. It simply means that the form of the relationship has changed. And remember that you have many wonderful same-page people in your life who value what you value. This is so important. For several years now, I have asked the universe to send me new friends who are on the same page as I am. And although I have kept so many friendships with loved ones who don't agree with me, it helps to have others to talk with as I explore my future. This choice doesn't replace family. It stabilizes us so family doesn't drain us dry. And please know, dear Michael, you are not alone. You are not crazy. You're not too sensitive. You are part of a quiet, steady group of people choosing discernment and love without hysteria in a very loud world. I look forward to hearing of your new connections with like-minded people, and please don't forget that I'm here for you always.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have American singer-songwriter with a passion for storytelling through music, film, and live concerts. We welcome Leroy Mobley to the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Leroy.
Hi, Filippo. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. And it's so interesting, when you and I spoke today, some of what we talked about, I heard Donnie Yance say in a different way when it came to music and spirituality. Yeah. And did you hear that?
yeah, I did. I was picking up some of those things.
I thought it was quite special, actually, and it warmed my heart, because we need more of those kinds of conversations, and you bring them through your music in a subtle way, one might say. I have to say, I heard some really, and we will hear tonight, some really powerful lyrics that really brought us home to ourselves when we were listening as a group, and really digging your music and saying, we got to have him on the show. So what is it? What is the story, the main story you're telling?
I think the main story would be that I'm telling is that, you know, we are made to be loved. Mm. And anytime that love is either distorted or defiled, everything breaks down. Mm. So when we go back to the source of love and the blueprint of love, that's whenever we start to heal. So there's a lot of brokenness in the world. And through the brokenness that I've been through, I have chosen to write love songs that I call like first and second commandment love songs, because depending on, your background and everything, I kind of base my lyrics and the narratives of how I write lyrics on like loving God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, like God as in Yahweh, and then loving my neighbor as I love myself. So there's a balance of, spirit, soul, body activity happening to make the love thing work.
I take it from a little bit that you've shared that you grew up maybe in an experience where there wasn't enough love. Or am I correct in assuming that based on what you said to me earlier?
I mean, I would say I grew up in an experience where my parents did the best they could, and the measure of love that they received is the measure of love that they were able to give. So I don't fault them for their efforts, because if they didn't do what they did, I wouldn't be where I am now. So I actually thank them, in the relative sense of how they loved me, because the love that they did give me led me to where I am today.
And where did you bridge the gap to the level of understanding and experience of love that you have now? How did you elevate that?
I think it was my search for love, I guess you'd say, and my journey, I guess, with like spiritual practices. So, I mean, I grew up in, a home where I went to the Baptist church, and I received, Jesus Christ as my Lord and personal Savior at like 6 years old. And then there was a whole bunch of, traumas and dysfunctions that happened all throughout the way. And I explored a little bit of Taoism, a little bit of Tantra. I was very big into like yoga and meditation. I was even kind of studying to doing like Reiki and body electric. And it wasn't until I had like an encounter with different dreams and different things like that that pointed me back to Jesus Christ, the Nazarene, as the way, that I was like, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. And then as I leaned in more to being, Jesus as the Messiah, I kind of like identify even almost as like a Judeo-Messianic, like Gentile or something, because I definitely recognize like the Eastern Jewish origins, like the, Israel and that kind of thing of Jesus. So I kind of have more of like a, like an Eastern view of Jesus, more so than what, popularized like Westernized or like Christian view. But I definitely recognize that, different titles and people associate different things with different things. But I'm definitely like, would be, I guess, more internally governed as far as how I am experiencing love, and not so much as like an outer influence of, oh, well, this is what love is. And people telling me, I just, it's kind of like the restorative factor of like being healed by the true source of love has enabled me to kind of like discern and decipher like what's real and what's not real.
Well, it's that kind of unitive love that I sensed in this song that we're going to hear right now. So where did Better Together come from, and where do you see it going?
Well, that's a great question. Better Together came from, I would say, growing up in the South as an African American male, like a black man in America. Like I grew up in the suburbs, around like, Caucasian, but it was actually kind of mixed, but it was mostly like, suburban kids. And both of my parents were in the military, and they both were deployed in war. So having a very, my, it was first, my dad was in Vietnam, my mom was in the Gulf War. My dad's an engineer, was not an engineer. My dad is, they're both retired, but my dad was more on the mechanical side, so he wasn't in infantry. And then my mother is a retired nurse, so she was like in the hospitals and stuff like that, but they were still, had to be abroad. So the war and just the South and that kind of thing, and being very connected to more the mortality of existence. And then all of the things that are trying to distract us from reality. This was like a start with belief, and, transition into, that life is a ride and, we are better together. It's both my parents grew up in segregation, so they had a very clear and different experience. Like, I'm a millennial, but, them as baby boomers, their experience was very different, and how they reacted to it was also very different as far as my mother's point of view, my dad's point of view. So seeing and being around people who have been affected directly by certain things, this is the very first song I ever wrote, and it kind of just flowed out of me, for, I think, from the Holy Spirit. And where I see it going is, I have a dream for this song, and I laugh because, not because I am like nervously like throwing it away, but because it would be so joyful to do it, is to have this be a part of the LA 28 Olympics opening ceremony.
You're here.
Yeah. So I have like a whole, envision of like all these nations and, this whole like coming together thing, because even whenever I released the song, I think I wrote it in 2017, I released it in 2018. And then whenever I saw that, our beautiful city will be, I was honored to, host the Olympics, and seeing that the motto for LA 28 was like, oh my goodness, are you serious? So it's kind of like, huh, this is interesting. So that's where I hope to see it going, at least.
Okay, well, we'll get to hear it here on the Life Changes Show. This is Leroy Mobley's original song, pre-recorded, Better Together.
Don't believe the hype, people fought and died. Love your neighbor because it's right. Underneath our skin, we're all made the same. Every tribe and tongue and nation, set your fears aside and just take your time. No worries, no worries, enjoy the ride. There is nothing stopping me. Nothing stopping you. There is nothing stopping us, because we're better together. Folks back home might talk about this and that. Things they say might rub you the wrong way. You can be the change that you wanna see. There is proof in our history. Set your fears aside and just take your time. No worries, no worries, enjoy the ride. There is nothing stopping me. There is nothing stopping you. Nothing stopping us, because we're better together. Don't let hate, crime from ignorance control your heart. Stopping you, there's nothing stopping us, because we're better together. We're better together. We're better together. We're better together.
And so we are, better together. Leroy Mobley, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I believe that.
Let's share with people how they can hear more of your music. Well, first, Leroy, L-E-R-O-Y, and then Mobley, M-O-B-L-E-Y. So LeroyMobley.com is his website, yes. Right? And then then we have all the links at the Life Changer show page, but basically that's it on all the socials, right?
Yep, it's all there.
Find Leroy Mobley there. And so, Leroy, you and I were talking about something that was interesting. I've often thought, I'm a performer myself, as you know, and being on that stage, I've often said, I wish you to the audience could feel how I'm feeling right now with all the energy that you give me. But I haven't performed on a stage with 100,000 people or 200,000. And so I've thought, wow, not I wonder what that's like, but almost in a sense of that's a lot of energy. And if the person receiving that doesn't know what to do with it, that could be dangerous. So you took it a whole step further than I've ever thought of. So tell us, please.
Yeah, so as I have traveled and performed at some, measure and level in front of people and, happened to be, people knew my name in the audience and they're like saying my name. And then, the aftermath of that during that season, I would say whenever I was in Japan singing at Disney on their Broadway stage show, Big Band Beat, was doing 2 to 5 shows a day. And they're only 31-minute shows, but when you kind of warm up and go up and down, you're still performing. So I realized, and I didn't necessarily have the language for it until after losing some of the most gifted people who walk the face of the earth. Mm. And I've had people maybe compare me to people that are really well known, and I'm not going to say their name as if I'm putting myself in their class, but they've said the names of some of these people to me, and I'm like, wow, thank you. But idolatry and worship are something that the human condition can either fall into or were made for. So I concluded that when a human being is worshiped, it kills the worshiper and it kills the person being worshiped. Mm. Because whenever I was performing so much and had all of this kind of stuff going on, I was very, very, very depressed and extremely low energy whenever I was not performing. So since I had all this kind of what I'm going to call physiological dysfunction in the experience of performing on that level of output consistently, and then seeing, Prince and, the late Michael Jackson and the late Whitney Houston, they were so gifted, but, maybe the information wasn't out yet that in order to truly navigate glory, which I would call the most expressive response to something amazing. Men have glory, God has glory. When we give men the glory that only God has, it starts to cause a breakdown in the body, in the soul, in the spirit. So whenever I was, so my breakdown entry was just depression and low energy. I would go home and I would be crying, oh my goodness. And I'm crying and I'm why am I crying? All these things, the trauma past and stuff is coming up. But then I would go perform all every day. And then I would come home, put on the heater and just cry. So that was the experience. Okay, then fast forward. It's okay, the way to be able to, that I found thus far, is to create a cycle of life and leave the cycle of death, is to leave the gifting or put the responsibility or who's the source of this? Because we have the source, right? like in us, but it's a matter of saying, okay, glory to God, you know, like glory to Yahweh, glory to the creator of the heavens and the and earth and the universe. Like we have to give glory to the creator, not to the created thing or the created person or the created song. Because whenever we don't do, at least whenever I didn't do that, I had a lot of problems. And then, you know, serving, I believe servant leadership is the highest form of artistry. It's not idolatry. And the reason I say idolatry is because it's assigning deity to objects, persons, places, and things that don't have the capacity to sustain the level of worship in which they've been adulated.
Interesting.
So if I'm like, so the sun, right? The sun is like giving off energy, giving off energy, giving off energy. If I say, okay, I'm going to take the position of the sun and give off that energy, I don't have the capacity to give off energy in the sun. Like my body, like I'm going to like be dead in like a couple of decades. Like I can't just keep giving, giving, giving like that. Like I would burn out literally. So it's like, okay, whenever there's like something amazing happens, like, of course you can say like, thank you. You could receive accolades, you know, recognition, but then ultimately just a little tweak, a little adjustment of saying like, you know, glory to God, you know, I just want to thank, you know, the creator of heaven and earth from where the gift came from. Like it's just that simple of a shift that I found has been the difference between life and death as far as my physiological experience. So I would say shifting from idolatry to servant leadership, like public service, you know, is really the way to be amazing and great, but stay in a cycle of life and end well instead of go down a downward spiral of death and end, you know, who knows how.
Good on you, Leroy. We're going to get to hear a second song, but before we do, this is a whole other very big topic, but I do want to at least acknowledge that you do have a music message goal, and that is what?
My music message goal is to end systemic fatherlessness. Because there is a distorted view on what a father is due to, you know, pain and trauma and different things from the fathers that we might have had or didn't have that happened to them, that happened to them, that happened to them, and just goes on and on and on and on. Because the issue is the father of lies is trying to keep humanity from the father of truth. And the function of my music is to soften the heart, open the mind, open the soul to receive truth, so that all those ugly things that the father of lies did will be exposed and we don't go along with that anymore and seek the true father, who is the, like, the, you know, fathers give provision, they give protection, you know, they give correction, they give, you know, love and just many different things. And the reason why I said end is because, you know, it started somewhere. So if it started, it could stop. It wasn't just like, you know, and it might have started like centuries and centuries and centuries, you know, years and years and years ago, but it could stop. And then systemic is that it's ingrained in every fabric of society. So there is, you know, toxicity and masculinity and femininity and all this kind of stuff like that. But really, those are attempts to try to navigate the issues that the father of lies is pumping through, you know, all existence. So the fatherlessness is that anybody who's come from a broken home, anybody whose parents have been divorced, anybody who's ever had a challenge with male authority due to being hurt or deceived or whatever that is, there is a way that leads to life. And my music is designed to be able to lead people to that life source, which I truly believe and have experienced over and over again, is having Yahweh as my father through Jesus Christ the Nazarene as my Lord and Savior. because I did it through a bunch of different areas and a bunch of different spiritual constructs, that I'm not saying that anybody who's doing something that's not what I'm doing needs to like come under judgment or condemnation or anything. I'm just giving my personal experience and how I was able to be led to life. And I want to bring people to life, or at least give them an invitation to try it. Just try it, you know, try prayer, you know, just try, you know, try just sitting in your room and just being like, okay, you know, God of your father, you know, show me, just try it. Like, and you'll be prompted, you know, to be able to give it a shot. Cause that's how I started.
Thank you, Leroy, for sharing that, and more power to you. Now, actually, I don't remember all the lyrics now, and I'm trying to think of quality time. I was assuming it was romantic, but I suppose it could be, I mean, the part that I remember, it could also be like a son and his dad or somebody, right? Or is it strictly romantic? I don't remember all the lyrics.
Well, I mean, well, you picked it. I mean, you said it.
Okay.
So, the initial thing is the assumption, oh, this is romantic. But then whenever I, in my own personal self, like the music video was yet to be created yet, but I had like images of, you know, a parent holding their first newborn and then growing up and then them, you know, kind of, yeah. Oh yeah, get away from it. You know, or it could be a romantic thing. It could be a grandmother. It could be, you know, a caretaker or a coworker, or, you know, somebody who was a mentor, you know, but it's in the theme of healthy love. And since quality time is one of the called the love languages, it's my number one love language. So yeah, whenever I was writing this song, there were moments of my dad, my father, that were very much a part of this. And then of course, you know, some girl that I wanted to be with, but, you know, but definitely it does have a familial, it's all forms of healthy love relationships. It's quality times. It's not just centrally romance.
Well, here it is. This is Leroy Mobley's original song, pre-recorded, Quality Time, here on The Life Changes Show.
Spend quality time with me. Spend quality time. I just wanna spend time with you, like when we first met each other. Everything's so new and exciting. Electricity, power like lightning. No phones or any distractions. Get some real human connection. It's what life's about anyway. Actions speak louder than what we say. Sense. Spend quality time with me. Spend quality time with me. Spend quality time with me. Spend quality time.
just a thing when you look back. Did you live your life with no regrets? Take quality time with me. 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 With me.
Leroy Mobley. Leroy, thank you for spending quality time with us. Leroy is L-E-R-O-Y, Mobley, M-O-B-L-E-Y. Find him at leroymobley.com or on all the socials at Leroy Mobley. What a pleasure connecting with you and getting to share your music. And guess we'll see you at the Olympics. Leroy, you're muted, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I mean, I hope so. I mean, and, you know, we'll be there together. Better together.
Better together. All right. Well, good stuff. Thank you so much. All the best to you.
All right. Thank you. You have a wonderful time.
Until the next time we connect, it's such a pleasure. Okay. So with a big thank you once again to Leroy Mobley, and another big thank you to our interview guest, Donnie Yance. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, and our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, I am Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.